I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Welcome to the Intercooler Podcast.
Welcome to the final episode of the year, episode 141, with me, Dan Prosser, my co-host, Andrew Frankel. It seemed like a good opportunity to look back at the year just gone, some of our favourite cars, some of our least favourite cars, thinking back to the fun things we got up to this year, but also look ahead to 2023, some of our plans for next year and some of the really important, interesting new cars that are coming down the line. But before we get on with the episode, let me just thank you all for your support throughout the year, for listening to the podcast, for subscribing to the Intercooler app or website if you do. We really appreciate it. So Merry Christmas to you all. Have a great new year. We'll be back in January. This is the final episode of the Intercooler podcast in 22 because we're giving ourselves Christmas week off. I'm not sure we deserve it, but we're doing it anyway.
I think we deserve it.
Okay, we deserve it. I agree. So this is our opportunity then to look back at 2022 year in review. We'll talk about our favourite new car of the year or some of the other cars that we've enjoyed driving. Maybe some of the exciting things we got up to. Also a chance, though, to look ahead to 2023, what we've got planned and the cars we're looking forward to. First of all, though, I mean, there's something we have to talk about before we get stuck into this podcast, and that's a very special Christmas episode of Last Blast.
Yeah, I went and had a chat with Gordon Murray. I mean, everybody knows who Gordon Murray is. Everybody knows his track record in Formula One and with McLaren F1 and the stuff that he's doing now. But if you know Gordon, I've been lucky enough to know him probably 30 years, since the earliest days of the F1. And if you sort of, you know, get along and that sort of thing, he will just sit down, he'll just talk, and he will talk and talk and talk. And unlike most people who talk and talk and talk, he's never not interesting. And he's never afraid to, you know, tell you how he sees the world. And to sit down with him and just sort of get him to pick out his favourite cars that he didn't make himself, although one of them he did. But it's not the F1.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say anything about what he has chosen, but the McLaren F1 is not one of his cars. Which I thought, you know, if anybody was going to go on that show and nominate one of their one of their own cars, it would, you know, it would be Gordon nominating the F1 because, as I've said many times before, it's, you know, it's the car that did the greatest leap in road car performance that there's ever been. But he didn't. So it was just a. It was a fascinating chat. I think it was scheduled for like half an hour, and I think we did an hour and 40 in the end. And you just let the tape, when the stuff is that good, you just let the tapes roll, which we did. And it was great to see him. He's on cracking form. I mean, he must be, 76, 77 You know, he's not a young man anymore. It doesn't seem to have admit, I don't think he's noticed. He's just he's just an absolutely relentless dynamo. And we talked about all sorts of stuff. You know, both in all the way through his early career with Brabham and then to McLaren. And you know, various things that went wrong, and then obviously onto what he's up to now. So it's a really, really good, interesting episode. It's a fantastic Christmas special because people tend to have a bit more time at Christmas, which is why, you know, 100 minutes of, you know, of Gordon to sort of see you out when you're out walking the dog or whatever. I think it's got nothing to do with me. I think he's just a cracking subject, and we're, you know, we were lucky to have him.
Yeah, if you don't know about Last Blast, it's a relatively new podcast series that's interview-based, and the idea is we get fascinating guests from the world of cars to come on, and it's a discussion about their life and work. It's a fairly personal one, but we ask them about the six cars that have meant most to them during their lives. And so it's I don't think anyone has done something quite like this in the car podcasting space. We think it's a bit of a new idea. It's called Last Blast, and yeah, this episode with Gordon Murray will be available on Thursday, but of course we'll make plenty of noise about it. Weekly reminder that you can give a subscription to the Intercooler as a gift, and if you haven't yet bought that present for that car mad person in your life, well, it's probably too late to send them something. It's not too late to buy a subscription to the Intercooler. Head to the-intercooler.com, find the gifts page, and you'll see that you can choose 3, 6, or 12 months. You'll see that we will send you a digital gift voucher immediately. And it's a very cost-effective way to give a brilliant present. It's easy for you. We think the recipient will love it. It couldn't be more straightforward.
Yeah, I mean, you can just email it to them, or you can print it out if you're going to see them. You can try putting it in the post, see how you get on.
Yeah.
It's a pretty easy way to sort out the sort of problems that we all find ourselves with this time of year.
So, let's look back then at 2022.
Yes.
Now, I can tell that 22 was a very different year for me because for the first time in a decade or more, I wasn't at the forefront of driving all the new significant performance cars. You know, I used to drive all the new Ferraris, McLarens, Porsches, all the exciting stuff, all the new hot hatches and sports cars. This year, I've missed quite a lot of stuff because I've been doing this. I've been building TI. I've been working on this thing rather than being out and about driving new cars. So actually, I've loved it. But next year, I think will do more. I have, because I just like... I like spending my time building something. I've wanted to do it for a very long time, so I feel really lucky to get to do that. But next year, I want to get back to it, certainly.
I think one of the things we've discovered this year, well, we discovered it a bit last year, but certainly this year, is that something like TI doesn't just happen, does it?
Not at all.
It is a relentless monster in its ability to just soak up time. And that's fine, because, you know, we love it. And it's going very well, and so you don't resent the time, do you? But
no.
Yeah, you must get yourself back in the fun stuff next year.
Yeah, I'll do more next year, hopefully.
I, on the other hand,
go on.
Well, I mean, you know, what can I say? No, I've been very lucky. You know, I have been able to stay at the coalface, and you know, getting all the maybe not absolutely everything that's come out, but most of the stuff. Mm. I wonder, people always go to when they do these things, it was a vintage year. And I sort of wonder whether it is or not. I've always thought, you know, it's one of those sort of pat phrases that people come out and go, yes, it was a vintage year. I'm not sure that it was. There were undoubtedly some very good cars, some very interesting cars. There were some slightly disappointing cars. There were certainly one or two very poor cars. I think it was, how would I put it? I think it was a year.
Mm. It was certainly a year. We can agree on that. Okay, so whenever I think back, reflect on a year, what I do is I go to the Photos app on my phone, scroll back to the 1st of January, and just trawl through. Because if I've done something or driven something interesting, I'll take a photo, probably too many. And so that's how I remind myself what I've been up to. But I think we should... I mean, we're not going to talk about the new cars in real detail because we sort of covered that off in last week's episode, didn't we? But we can talk about what your highlight was, what your new car highlight was.
That requires me. That assumes I've already thought of it.
Okay, well, do you want to trot through the contenders then?
Well, there are so many because, you know, I just like cars that know what they're for. So I could nominate the MG4, little electric MG. It's come over, cost 25. Basically, it's a much better car than a Volkswagen ID3 for thousands and thousands of pounds less. It's better looking, it's better to drive, it costs less to buy. And I think in sort of like fitness for purpose, that qualifies it as being a really, really good car. But I also, at the other end, I drove a Chiron, Super Sport, whatever the really, really fast, the 300-mile-an-hour Chiron is, with Andy Wallace. And I've always been a bit sort of, I wonder what those cars are like, because I've driven a Veyron and hadn't really got on with it, because I just thought, well, yeah, it's quite impressive for a car that weighs 2 tonnes, but I'd just much rather it didn't weigh 2 tonnes. But the Veyron was... it was epic in the Chiron was epic in a way that it just did something that I'd not known a road car do, and I just find that interesting. And whether that's, you know, an ability like a Defender to go up a muddy slope or a Chiron to do 300 miles, I just found it interesting that I was sitting there driving a car which was capable of doing something that no other road car I'd done could do. For a car of the year, I mean, there are some obvious kind of candidates, aren't there? I mean, GT4 RS.
Yeah.
Cayman GT4 RS, I thought was just absolutely what a modern, fun Porsche should be like. I preferred it to the GT3. You didn't, which is fair enough. I drove the Artura, and... to me, that is absolutely what a McLaren like that should be. I mean, the Artura, the thing about the Artura is it is so... I don't think that there is another car out there which does so well in both road and track environments. It's fantastic on the road because it's so nicely damped and it's comfortable and you can see out of it, and it's just the right sort of driving environment. It is, of course... fantastically fast. I mean, to the extent you drive, find yourself driving it thinking, I bet there's going to be a compromise on the track. It's just going to get a bit sort of ragged. It feels too optimized for the road, but then you get on the track and it's not. I mean, it's probably not as... it's not a GT3 RS on the track or anything like it.
No, it's not trying to be, is it?
That is not trying to be. It's trying to do both, and it does it amazingly well. The 296 GTB I drove and really, really liked. I'd said, and I know I said this on the podcast before, that when I drove the SF90, I can remember thinking to myself, this would just be so much nicer if it didn't have a driven front axle and actually had some boot space you could go somewhere in it. And wouldn't it be great if Ferrari built that car? Well, that's what a 296 GTB is. And it's as good as it sounds. It's a really, really capable, credible, fantastically well-engineered, truly great Ferrari. I didn't get a massive emotional attachment to it. I didn't just sort of think there and sit there thinking, God, you know, if only I was, you know, a wealthy man, I'd be marching over and slapping down the money right here and right now. I didn't get that from it, but it was.
But that's telling, isn't it? Don't you think that's really telling?
Well, like,
what was the last Ferrari that you really longed, pined, ached to own?
Oh, that's a question to spring on me, isn't it? What was the last?
Well, okay. Do you? I'll
put it. Do you? Probably.
Yeah. Fine. That's a good answer. Yeah, very good answer. And that's a decade ago. More than a decade ago.
Yeah.
Whew. Interesting, isn't it?
Well, then, okay. LaFerrari. Okay. Yeah. LaFerrari.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay, but that's not what you're talking about, is it? Mm. But you know, of a Ferrari that, you know, someone could in theory go out and buy, probably the 458. Despite the fact that I think that Ferraris, as cars, have just gone on getting better and better and better. I mean, I can remember when I first drove a Roma, I was just amazed by how good it is. And the 296 is the same, and, you know, 812s and everything else. I mean, they're fabulous things, but it's interesting, actually. I think they might have lost something in that sort of emotional dimension, which is, frankly, you know, years and years back was, frankly, the reason you bought a Ferrari, isn't it? Because
absolutely.
You kind of know that there'll be any other cars which would be technically better, but they didn't look like that, and they didn't sound like that, and they didn't stir your soul like that. So that's why you got a Ferrari.
Yeah, I've not driven the 296, so I'll reserve judgment until I have. But Yeah, it is interesting to me that I'm not actually too concerned. I haven't been on the phone to Ferrari or whatever trying to get myself in the driver's seat of that car. I'm not sure why that is, but given an opportunity, I'll jump in it. Thank you very much. So do you want to declare one car your car of the year? Can you do that?
Well, I've been thinking about it. I mean, in many ways, but the problem with this is you always end up nominating a bloody 911. The Cayman's not a 911, but it's not far off. And there's been the GT3 RS. But actually, I think the 911T I drove with the absolute base engine, but with a manual gearbox, which hasn't been available on the 992 until now, but with a limited slip diff, and Porsche active suspension management, which you couldn't get. I just think that's a really nice sweet spot. I mean, if you think that the 911 is the greatest sports car there's ever been, and the old sort of the hoary old adage about less being more when it comes to a 911, that was kind of where it's at for me. You know, base engine, three pedals, you know, one or two nice little bits on it, like the limited slip diff. The one I drove did have four wheel steering, which I'd absolutely have on it. But that's only optional. And goodness me, I'd be happy with that.
It's really strange.
I never drove it. I sat there thinking, gosh, I wish it had, you know, a Carrera S engine. I wish it had another 70 horsepower, whatever it's got. I just didn't. Whereas if I'd been driving a Carrera S, I know I would have sat there thinking, I wish it had a GTS engine. Strange, isn't it? But when you're in the base spec 911, the kind of, for some reason, the sort of terms of reference are just a bit different. And I was quite lucky where I drove it, because it was up a road that was closed. I think there'd been a landslide or something, but the good news is it was closed 27 miles away from where I entered it. And it's just one of those great American mountain roads. So I had the place to myself.
And as far as kind of modern sports cars go, it's the opposite to a Ferrari 296, relatively speaking. You know, it doesn't have any hybrid. It's got a manual box. It's much, much cheaper. It's not all about the power.
Sitting here,
not having driven either of them, I'd prefer to jump in the 911T because I like cars that you can use on the road, access their performance on the road.
I mean, it's 0 to 62 times 4.5 seconds, which these days, I mean, there are any number of hot hatches which will beat that with four-wheel drive.
Yeah.
And, you know, and again, it just goes to show that it's just not about the power. And so often, because the power, you know, with the power often comes weight. And also, you know, the faster you go, the less usable the car can be. Because if you have to be driving at a speed which is, you know, antisocial or unsafe in public to get the most out of the car, then, you know, what's the point?
Yeah, what is the point indeed? You still haven't declared one car your favourite car of the year. Is it the 911?
Well, it would be the 911 if it wasn't a bloody 911, because it's just so crashingly predictable, isn't it?
Yeah.
All right. If it can't be the Dacia Jogger, which
well,
I also
drew,
I sat and I think all the car of the year jury, which means I have to drive everything. And actually, it's a really good discipline for me, and I remain as interested in all the more accessible stuff as I do in the more sporting stuff that we tend to feature on TI. And sometimes it goes back to what I was saying about fitness for purpose. The Dacia Jogger, okay? It's a big sort of really, really cheap, do-everything family bus. And it's brilliant. It just does the job. So, yeah, in another world, that would be up there. But no, okay, 911T. There you go. I've waffled on too much. 911T is the one.
As a car journalist, I spend lots of time far from home in airports and hotels using whatever Wi-Fi network is available. But I've started using NordVPN to protect my devices and data while traveling. It's easy to use. And best of all, I can still watch streaming services when I'm not at home. I can't tell you how annoying it is to be told I can't watch a Grand Prix or catch up on Top Gear just because I'm overseas. But now I can be halfway around the world and make websites and streaming platforms think I'm back at home in Bristol. We've partnered with NordVPN to offer you a massively discounted rate, and I mean more than 60% off the standard cost, plus 4 months for free. It's a hell of an offer. If you've been meaning to check out VPNs but haven't got around to it, just go and try NordVPN now. That's NordVPN. Take advantage of this offer at nordvpn.com/intercooler, or you can click on the link in the description of this podcast. There's a 30-day money-back guarantee, so you can try NordVPN risk-free. Right, let's get back to the podcast. We did discuss it last week, but do you want to mention the GR86? No, I'll mention the GR86 because that was one of the significant new cars of the year that I did drive. I went on the launch and I just thought it was fantastic. I liked the GT86, but there are things about it that annoyed me. Things like the engine sound, things like the steering I never really got on with, things like the springing of the pedals, I don't think they quite matched, things like the gear shift. And I actually, unless you're hooning about around some cones in a car park or on track, I didn't get on with the super slippery Prius tyres either on the GT86. Fine when you're hooning about, but when you want to drive a car accurately and trust the grip and so on, I never quite got on with them. That's why I
wouldn't. Wouldn't you just rather be going sideways though, if you're on a track?
Yeah, but you can't always do that on the road. You can do it in second gear around tight corners, but the rest of the time, I prefer to have the.
I mean, I'm completely not grip with you on this.
Yeah, interesting.
Don't get me wrong. I love the GR86. You'll talk about it in a minute, but. To me, it is nothing like as great a car now as the GT86 was 10 years ago. I can remember getting a GT86. First time I ever drove it was on a wet track. And honestly, the closest I come to coming off was literally through laughing so much. I was crying with laughter, and I just thought...
But I think you can still do all that stuff in the GR86 on its better tyres.
Well, yeah, but it's just got more grip, isn't it? It's got a lot more grip.
Yeah.
Which means you've got to be going that much faster before you can start to cock about in it.
Yeah, that's true. I just think I think they've honed it and refined it and
improved
those
things
that I didn't
like. It's a better car. Well, I don't think it's a greater car today now than the GT86 was a decade ago.
Fair point.
Each their own.
Well, the other cars that I enjoyed driving were not new cars at all. Well, actually, maybe the Tuthill 9146 Resto Mod kind of is a new car because it was a new built this year. Loved it. It has the GT wide body arches on it, so it looks superb. It's got a great stance. It sits on the ground. It's a one-off, this thing. It has the engine from a 2.7 RS, which is a great motor, 210 horsepower or something. Weighs nothing. I think it's sub-ton. So it goes like stink. It's got wonderful unassisted steering. In terms of, I moan more than anyone I know about modern performance cars and how what they want you to do on the road is drive them flat out, go as hard as you dare. That's what they're built to do, it seems to me. The faster they get, the less inclined I am to do that. Whereas this Tuthill Resto Mod, you can use all the power, you're not going that fast. But you only have to be going 6, 7, 8 tenths to feel like you're stretching it, exercising it, to feel like you're working at it. And you have to work at it. If you're lazy with getting down a gear, if you're not using all the power, if you're not working hard to use all the grip, you're not going that quickly. So to cover ground, you have to work at it. And it's super, super rewarding because of it. And Tuthill, they're doing some fantastic stuff now. So I'm going to make sure, that's one of the things I want to do next year, is go and drive some more Tuthill stuff. They've done some brilliant 911 Resto mods. And I have got an offer to go and drive one of their cars already. So once we've got some slightly better weather, that's absolutely top of my priority list.
Can we talk about some of the cars which didn't quite hit the spot?
We should.
I may not be about to make many friends here. Lotus Emira. I want to go back, and hopefully there'll be somebody at Lotus listening to this, and if they're still speaking at the end of this, maybe they'll ring me up. But I want to, the Emira I drove, it was just the wrong car in that it was one of these first edition things, but it had sort of touring suspension on it, but a really tight limited slip diff on it. On the track, it just understeered everywhere, and I never felt particularly at home in it. And given that this was meant to be the big statement, the big, post-Geely acquisition statement from Lotus, it just didn't quite do. I mean, it was fine. It was fun. I'm glad I went and drove it. But I mean, I can remember doing exactly that in an Elise in 1995 and just thinking, oh, wow. Okay, everything changes now. I didn't get that at all from it. And I just think I drove the wrong car. I mean, I'd like to drive whatever they call it, the Sport, which has the, you know, the grippy tyres and the diff and everything else, and is more track oriented. Or I'd like to actually, what I really like to drive is a completely standard car. A completely standard car. On the road, I'm not that bothered about the track. And because I want to, what I really want is to realise I was wrong. Or that I'd just been given the wrong car and that the car isn't. I mean, I know it's not a new car, anything like as much a new car as Lotus would like you to think it is. It is a heavily, 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 massively facelifted Evora. To the extent that you could, you know, if you squint a bit, think of it as a new car. But, you know, its origins are clear. And I just want to know how good that car can be, because there is nobody in the world who is not an employee of Lotus who wants Lotus to succeed more than I do. I just really, really, really want to that company to fly. It means so much to me. So hopefully I'll go and have another go in an Emira, and that'll be good.
Well, the Emira was another one of the cars that passed me by this year, so maybe they'll have both of us along and we can both try the Emira. Okay, on a similar note to the Resto mod, the Tuthill Resto mod I spoke about, I drove a lightweight Jaguar E-Type, actually a recreation, a continuation thing. Have you ever raced one of these, or have you had a go in one of them before? One of the originals, I mean.
Yeah, I've driven both a sort of standard lightweight E-Type, if you can call such a thing standard,
yeah,
and a completely whizzed up, you know, Goodwood Revival Special. I've driven both.
Mm. I just loved driving it. And the thing that leapt out at me, excuse the pun, was the I drove a C-Type continuation before I drove it, and I couldn't get on with this thing. I didn't feel like I fit in it properly. I couldn't get my head around the big steering wheel and all the awkward things about it, the gear shift. I just found it tricky, and it's the kind of car that I would need half a day in to get my head around and to really start moving around in it, and then maybe it'd be wonderful. Meanwhile, this E-Type, which is based on a design that's only 10 years younger, felt like 30 or 40, because it just felt like a modern car to me. I fit in it properly, comfortable seating position, gear shift that I could just bang in and out.
But also technologically,
yeah,
if you think of the difference between a C-Type and an E-Type, as you say, you know, it's only 10 years, but it's the difference between a live rear axle and independent rear suspension, and it's the difference between a space frame chassis and a monocoque.
Yeah, yeah. What a 10 years it was, exactly.
What a 10 years!
It's not any 10 years, is it?
Not any 10 years, and that's why. It's just technologically, the two cars are just night and day apart.
It's such an eye opener.
Yeah,
really good opportunity to get to do that and understand what that difference is really like. Can I give you one more? This is slightly left field. I only did a few laps of Dunsfold in it, but the Praga Bohema, the hypercar.
Bohema!
And, you know, I'm not entirely sure. It's 1.1 million quid, isn't it, before tax? It's got a Nissan GTR engine in it. They want to sell, I think it's 79.
It looks fantastic.
Yeah, it looks superb. Actually, when up close, it looks brilliant. It's expertly finished. Very, very high standard.
Yeah.
But it's a hard sell, isn't it? 1.1 million quid
just because
when no one's
it
heard
should
of you.
Sell. Just because it's as good as any as other cars that might cost that money, doesn't mean it's going to sell. You know, there is nobody more brand sensitive than your typical 1.1 million quid car customer. Mm. And so this is what is it? It's a Praga Bohema. What's that? Is it Czech? Is it? And you don't want to have to explain it, do you?
No, you don't.
It's a Ferrari. It's a McLaren. Oh, okay, I know what that is.
Yeah, what's this thing? But because someone might think it's a 100 grand car, because they wouldn't necessarily know.
Because and because they might look at radicals and that sort of thing, which you know. But I wish them well.
I do, because it was fantastic to drive. I've never driven anything on track that's so at home on track that's entitled to wear a number plate.
Yeah,
it was unbelievable. The power. It was only running 550 horsepower. They will have 700. But even so, the power was sensational. Again, less than a ton. And just so exciting, but accessible. You know, this is it's an aero car. It's got, I think it's a good 800 kilograms of downforce at 155 miles an hour. So it's an aero car. But I could drive it. It's an amazing thing. It's fairly benign. It's approachable. So you've got this phenomenal amount of performance, phenomenal amount of grip and power, but you can use it from the second lap onwards. I think that says a lot about the car. I really liked it, actually.
I mean, I drove one of their race cars earlier in the year. And I spent my entire time, I'm afraid I didn't quite manage to do it, because I knew the car could do it, trying to get down the Crane of Kerr's flat in it. Yeah. And, you know, this is a really, really fast car. With enormous amounts of aero, and the only reason it wouldn't do it was the space between my ears. I know it would do it flat, but it's a
funny thing, isn't it?
It's a funny thing, you know. You're thinking, right, I'm going to be flat this lap,
and your foot just goes,
and you take one decision, and your foot takes another. And there's nothing strange, you can do about it. But it was a really good car. Another resto mod I drove, and I think this one cost £1.67 million, for the RML short wheelbase.
Yeah.
This is the...
I drove it as well, actually, earlier on in its development cycle.
So this was the fully finished thing, and I spent a day on the road in it and a day on a track in it. Yeah, maybe it wasn't such a bad year after all. Anyway, and what it was like, it's like a V12 GT86. Okay, it looks amazing. It's got that carbon body and it looks like a 250 GT. But the way it drives, because, you know, they've got Pirelli Rosso tyres on it. I'd forgotten the Pirelli Rosso even existed. It's basically, it's a concrete tyre with lots of sidewall. And it's just been set up to slide. And it's lovely and soft and engaging on the road. And then you get on the track and you've got, it's basically a 550 Maranello under. It's a completely rebuilt, blueprinted 550 Maranello underneath. When I drove it, there were lots and lots of other really, really fast things around at the time, some of which we've already spoken about. And every time I got out of it, I just thought, whatever I drive next isn't going to be as much fun as this. And I know they're going to make 30 minutes, £1.67 million, and we probably usually talk about it because it is in those terms an irrelevance. But, yeah, we're talking about cars we drove this year, and I just loved it because it was just, you know, a six-speed manual gearbox, a fantastic 5.5-litre naturally aspirated V12, rear-wheel drive, and just wants to skid. I mean...
You can see why people with the resources to buy these cars are sort of turning their attention to that sort of resto mod, can't you? Because... Well, you just set out the ingredients there. You can't get that stuff in a new car.
No.
And that's the stuff I want.
The ability to sort of, you know, and I guess it's the same deal with a Singer or with an Eagle E-Type, the ability to really tailor it to your own requirements and to sit down with individuals and create a bespoke car rather than sort of ticking things off an options list. I really, really liked it.
You mentioned Crane of Curves earlier, Donington Park. Yeah. One of my highlights of the year, and this came out of the left field. We were at Donington Park for Supercar Drivers' Secret Meet, and Karun was there with DTO Motorsport, who had a 911 GT2 RS. And he just sent me a message during the day, come here now, come to our pit garage, and I'll take you out in the GT2 RS. I've sat with lots of racing drivers. I've sat with racing drivers in much quicker stuff than a road legal GT2 RS. There's something about it. Karun, I don't know if he was just trying hard or something, but he was really, really on it. And it was just a privilege to see how a very, very skilled racing driver approaches a circuit. You know, how they use parts of it that I didn't even realise you could use. How late he was braking, how early he was getting on the power. You know, when you think, I thought that if he got on the power at this point, we'd just slide or understeer off or something. But somehow he's able to get the power down and you shoot out of corners. So thank you, Karun, for taking me out in that thing because it was mega.
Do you often wonder, as I do, so the gap between, on the one hand, you or me, on the other hand, Karun, how much of that gap would be removed if your talent level stayed the same, but you had Karun's levels of confidence. I mean,
confidence
crashed the car.
Well, that's true, but confidence is a huge part of it.
There is so much stuff in a racing car I don't do because I'm not quite sure of the outcome. Whereas Karun would just back himself to sort it out. Yeah. He might not know, but he'll just say, whatever it is, I can cope with it. So bang, and he'll get back on the power, 10 yards earlier than me, and he'll carry 5 miles an hour more out of this corner and therefore be doing 15 miles an hour more by the end of the straight. And that's what happens, isn't it? I just wonder how much of it is raw talent, clearly a bit, or a lot maybe, and how much of it is just backing yourself.
And experience as well. Yeah. I wonder how close you can get if you were fortunate enough to spend 5-10 years racing very, very fast cars all year. You could get close, but it's that next little bit, isn't it, that makes
the
difference?
It's the little bit, yeah. I mean, I think you could get to 90-95% of it, but you'd never get the last bit. Mm. No.
Yeah, that was very cool, though.
What else?
Have you got any other cars you want to talk about, or any other highlights of your year?
Slightly disappointing Caterham. And
which
I only
one?
Say that because, I own a Caterham, I've raced Caterhams, I've built Caterhams, I've crashed Caterhams, I've done everything you can do in a Caterham. I adore Caterhams. And you'd think the 420 Cup would be, the Caterham of Caterhams, because basically it's the race car made road legal. But it's so expensive. It's £20,000 more than a standard 420, which has the same engine, still has a limited slip diff in it. But, it's very, very stripped back. It's got the sequential SADEV gearbox in it, which, unless you're absolutely driving it with your pants on fire, isn't that nice to you. And I could just remember thinking to myself, if you're going to have a car like this, you want it to be a complete nut job. And if you're going to have a nut job, Caterham, you've got to get a supercharged car with another 100 horsepower. Or if you're not going to do that, then you don't want the race car chassis. And it just stuck me as being stuck betwixt and between. Mm. It was... The chassis was too strong for the engine, it's just one of those. It's slightly strange things because usually I just 1.6, Super 7, anything like that, road sport, love it, but this just didn't gel.
Well, this is interesting because you drove it on the road first, but I know you've since driven it on the track, and I would have expected that you'd drive it on the track and go, aha, I get it, but that clearly didn't happen.
Well, no, it was lovely on the track. It was very fast on the track, but no, I still. On the track, I just wanted another 100 horsepower. on the road, I didn't want a sequential box. On a track, I absolutely wanted the sequential box, and just go banging all the way through. But, it's got like 210 horsepower, but they've got an engine with 310 horsepower. So why on earth not use that? Well, I think it's called the 620R, isn't it? So they do that. And, it was just strange. I mean, on the track, it's ridiculous. It just didn't feel fast enough. you come honking out of some corner and think, right, let's go, guys, and it wouldn't.
Interesting. So one of the cars I drove this year was a Formula One car at Spa.
I'm sorry? Oh, okay. Yes, I know what you're going with.
Kind of.
Yeah.
Very lucky to get to go and see a company near me, literally 10 minutes from my house, just a bizarre coincidence, called Dynisma. They make a sort of next generation racing simulator, and they're very, very sophisticated, so much so that Ferrari has bought one for its Formula One team, and so actually just to get an opportunity to drive a sim like that is very rare because they're so expensive that time on them itself is expensive. And so I was probably driving a 2019 Formula One car around a dry Spa for a good 20 minutes or something. Very, very lucky to get to do that. And it's the first sim I've ever tried that makes sense, that I could actually settle into and feel like I was getting somewhere and chip away at lap time by daring to brake later, by holding higher gears rather than changing down, by just committing a bit more. Sims in the past, I've driven a few, nothing quite at that standard. And I just spin off and I can't feel what's going on and I'm just all at sea. But this one was great.
Eau Rouge, easy flat?
It was. Initially, it's a curious thing because you think, well, why not just do it? Because if you have a massive crash, it literally doesn't matter. Yeah. But you're trying to drive neat and tidy. You're trying to drive well. And so initially I was getting down a gear just in the after the compression, just to stabilize it maybe. But then you realize that the faster you go, the more pressed into the ground it is by the aero, which is what you'd expect. And then you just pop out over the top, foot pinned, and it's fantastic. And actually, I think one of the most amazing things I felt in that simulator was when I did commit to the quicker corners, like Puon, that really quick double left-hander.
You weren't flat through that, were you?
Yeah. Well, not quite flat, no, but a little lift and then on the power almost as you're turning in.
Yeah.
And when you do that, when you carry that bit of extra speed, I'm sure I could feel the extra grip. I'm just so convinced I could feel the extra grip.
The car just gets easier to drive.
The car just gets easier and easier to drive. And, you know, it's not driving a Formula One car at Spa, but it gives you some idea of how quickly everything comes at you.
Yeah.
And so that was, it was a very, very cool thing to do. It's an amazing bit of kit. So, yeah, one of the best things I drove this year, no question.
Do you have a duffer of the year?
A duffer of the year? I drove, I picked you up in it, didn't I?
Oh, yes.
I don't know if duffer is fair, no, but it's the duffer. Least it's impressive. Just,
because if it was 40 grand, we wouldn't be having this conversation.
Least impressive car I drove this year was the Genesis GV60, the electric one, 65 grand. The one I drove was 75 grand. And it was kind of fine. There were some things I didn't particularly like about it.
It's an electric crossover SUV. You shouldn't be spending 75 grand on one of those.
75 grand. But then I drove the Kia EV6 GT, which is the same car underneath. Again, it's an expensive thing, 62 grand or something. But it had a load more power, nicer to look at, nicer to be in, better to drive. It just made more sense.
Okay. Mine is the Ford Mustang Mach-E GT.
Was that this year?
Well, I think it must have been.
Yeah, maybe it was.
Well, yes, it would have been very early this year. Well, certainly for me, maybe it's some other journalists. I drove it because it was shortlisted for the 2022. Well, the Mach-E was shortlisted for the 2022 Car of the Year. So I drove it in an event we held for that in February. And the Mach-E, as electric SUVs go, it looks good. It's a perfectly reasonable family hold-all if you can deal with all the range and everything else. But the GT, the fast one, I just hated it. It was just terrible. The brakes were just... I don't think I've ever driven a car with a less pleasant brake pedal. Not that the car wouldn't stop. Hmm. It just felt... You never knew what it was going to do. The ride quality was utterly... I mean, there's a bit of road near me. And I had to go up it once. And I thought, if I'm ever going to be back this way in this car, I'm going the other way. Because I just couldn't face it. It wasn't just uncomfortable. It was genuinely unpleasant. The sort of thing you're actually sitting there thinking, really?
It's nice to know there are still some crap cars out there.
Yeah, no,
and you and I still have a purpose in our lives.
Yeah, well, exactly. And that is undoubtedly one of them. I mean, a Mustang Mach-E, if that suits your purpose and that's the kind of car you want, with my blessing. But the GT, just avoid it. Best thing you did this year?
Best thing I did this year.
I'm only asking you because then I can get to tell you mine.
It's so hard. I don't know. I can't give you an answer to that straight away. I can. Buying a Golf GTI.
There you go.
I'm not going to dwell on it because I've spoken about it a lot, but it is fantastic. It's better than I ever could have hoped. It is the perfect car for me now and for the next few years.
And how much brilliant. Do you think of that is that it's a Mark 7.5 Golf GTI, which we all know is an absolutely fantastic car, and how much is it because that particular car is in exactly the right spec?
Probably more than you'd imagine. I think it's probably 30% because of the exact spec. It's a good chunk. You know, I enjoy the car much more because it's manual, because it's performance, because it's got the adaptive dampers, all those things. It's just absolutely... I wouldn't change a thing. Yours?
No. Oh, I'm so glad you asked. I did a high-speed demonstration at the group members' meeting in the Porsche 962C that won Le Mans in 1987. You're never going to beat that, are you?
No.
You're never going to beat that. I mean, I'm never going to beat that. And there were, I think there were, I don't know, 14, 15 Group C Porsches out there. And because one of my, because they went in date order, I was one of the last. So I got to see them all in front of me. Mm. And it was evening, so all the lights were on. And seeing that crocodile of Group C Porsches going around the track. And we all bunched up around, because we had to go behind a pace car. So what we did was, every time we got to the pits, we all just basically stopped and let the pace car get half a lap ahead. And then we nailed it until we caught it up again. Which wasn't ideal, but it was an awful lot better than nothing. And, yeah, I mean, blimey.
That's mega.
To be in, I mean, not a 962, a Works Rothmans 962, which that actual car had won Le Mans. It was the last Porsche, Works Porsche 962 to win Le Mans, 1987. What a thing to be able to do.
That's so superb.
Yeah,
that is superb.
I may never beat that, but I couldn't let this podcast end without without mentioning it.
Can we just rattle through a few of the cars we're looking forward to driving next year?
Yes. Yes. What
do
you think?
I'll give you mine. I'll give you mine.
Go on.
And as we are, well, as you and I know, I've had to politely decline an offer to go and drive it for personal reasons.
Yes.
We've got a baby coming and I can't be out of the country next month. But the 911 Dakar.
Yes.
And the offer was to go and... I want to drive it in the environment it's designed for.
Yes.
And sadly, the launch event is exactly that, isn't it? So I had the opportunity. I just can't do it. Was it in Morocco?
It is in Morocco. It will be in Morocco.
Yay.
On roads, on gravels, and on dunes.
Ah! Yeah, I'm gutted about that, because I may never get a chance to drive that car where it's
You'll
designed
drive
to
it.
Be driven. Yeah, I will, but not on dunes and gravel tracks. And oh, well.
Yeah. So what am I looking forward to? There's an electric Fiat Panda. There's an all-new Fiat Panda coming. I love Fiat Pandas.
Actually, that's quite cool, isn't it?
Yeah, well, it could be very cool.
Is it only electric?
Yeah, I believe so. I believe so. But actually, Stellantis have got a really cool sort of small EV platform, the new Jeep Avenger, which I haven't driven, but actually, which I'm going to drive between Christmas and New Year. But lots of my mates have driven it and said it's really, really good for that kind of car. So I am looking forward to that. What are we really looking forward to? There's the Ferrari SUV. You're going to tell me what it's called?
Puro Sangue.
Puro Sangue. What is that?
We have to anglicise it, don't we? We're not going to say Puro Sangue.
Puro Sangue.
We're going to say Puro Sangue. Probably Puro Sang. That's what it's going to get called.
It's the gue at the end, which I just kind of struggle with.
Yeah, I'll do a bit. But yeah. I'm more curious about that than really looking forward to it.
I'm very curious about that. I hope, and this isn't why we've been plugging the Gordon Murray podcast, but I really, really hope one of us gets to drive the T50 in 2023.
Yeah.
That could be an absolute landmark.
Yeah, it could be stellar.
And if it happens, if one of us does, the other one's just going to doorstep it. We're just going to come along too and go on, give it a go.
Yeah, I'm here.
We're
going
to have to, aren't we?
You can't turn it down.
No.
Well, okay, other end of the spectrum. BMW M2. There's a brand new BMW M2 coming.
That'd be good.
I've got a list of cars here, and that is the second most affordable on the list. It's going to be a 60 grand car, isn't it? Maybe more.
Yes, it is.
So I can't afford it, so it's not an affordable car, but at least it's not some six-figure thing like everything else seems to be.
Is there going to be a new Alpine next year? I think there's going to be an Alpine version of the new Renault 5, isn't there? But I don't know whether it's coming next year or not.
I think it comes much later on.
Yeah.
I think a couple of years away. But definitely keen to drive that.
Yeah.
I am driving the new Civic Type R at Thruxton next month.
Ah.
So that's the most affordable new performance car that's on my radar for next year. And it's still, what's that, 46 grand or something?
46 and a bit thousand pounds, yeah.
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 Oh, crikey.
Well, that's the way the world's going, isn't there?
Mm.
Yeah.
Do you know the one that I am really quite looking forward to driving is the new Mustang, or rather the sort of revised Mustang. And it's a funny thing because I used to be quite sniffy about those cars when, was it 2014? The Mustang was new and I was like, well, that's a big American barge, isn't it? Not really interested. And of course now it is affordable. It has got a manual gearbox. It has got a massive NA V8.
Well, it is the only car left.
Yeah.
It is the only car left with a naturally aspirated V8 in it.
Yeah.
Oh,
amazing.
And manual
really.
Gearbox, and the V8's at the right end, and it's driven at the other.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, we need to cherish these moments in these cars because, you know, they'll be, I mean, it'll be the last one of those. And then, you know, and with it, we'll die the naturally aspirated V8. You might, you know, there's probably a Camaro, there's probably stuff in the US you can buy which may still have a naturally aspirated V8 in it. But over here, I think that's it.
That is it. Strange times. Yeah. Well, there you go. Unless there's anything else you want to say about 22 or looking forward to 23, I just want to say thank you to everybody listening for supporting the podcast in 22. It's been a good year for the podcast. Thank you all for engaging, for sending in your questions, for sharing it and for writing your reviews of the podcast. And as a very special mention specifically to our app and website subscribers, the people who actually give us money, you are the reason we get to keep doing this. So thank you all. 23 is going to be a big year for us, and subscribers will see things happening from January, but it's going to be a hell of a year. We're going to ramp everything right up.
We've been making a lot of behind the scenes. When you start a venture like this, in fact, Dan and I are having exactly this conversation just before we press the record button. There's so much stuff you don't know because it's not, you know, TI is not something that's like anything that's ever been done before. Almost by definition, there's a huge amount of stuff you just have to find out because you don't know. And the only way you find out is trial and error, which in trial and error means, well, there's trial and there's error. And so you make mistakes and you learn. But in the last, I would say, the last couple of months, there's been a huge amount of stuff that's been going on behind the scenes. Basically just turning this tiny little cottage industry, which just started with me and Dan, you know, mucking about, into a proper little business. And we hope and we believe the fruits of those labours will become increasingly apparent throughout 2023, and that we will go on to do just more of the stuff that everybody loves, but do it better. I mean, we're proud of what we've done so far, and I genuinely, without wishing to sort of, you know, blow smoke up our own fundaments, I think that, you know, in the circumstances, I think that everybody involved with the TI project, I mean, particularly our brilliant contributors, have done, you know, fantastic work. But, you know, we are just starting. And we've got big plans. We really do.
Really, really big plans. It's going to be a hell of a year. Okay. Well, we've got a listener question coming up to end the final episode of the podcast for 22. It's one of those nice simple ones, Andrew, that you'll be able to answer off the top of your head.
Yeah.
I must remind you all to rate and review the podcast. That really helps. And please remember that you can give a subscription to the Intercooler as a gift in time for Christmas. For the petrol head in your life, it's very easy. It takes no time at all. We'll send you a digital gift voucher right away. Just head to the-intercooler.com and find the gifts page. Okay, so listener question comes from Josh Stevenson. And he says, everyone seems to rave on about how good the Ferrari 550 is, which harks back to what we were talking about earlier. But not so much about the 575. What happened? Did they ruin it with the facelift?
No. But they certainly didn't make it any better. They certainly made it uglier. Ruin is too strong a word. It was slightly spoiled. It wasn't as nice to drive. And, you know, the 550 was just the sweet spot. And, you know, I think that's now reflected in their second-hand prices. And, you know, if you can get a manual 575M, I think that's still quite a good thing. But, no, the 550 was just, it was better to look at. It was better to drive. It was just, yeah, it was just a better car. It wasn't ruined when it went to 575, but nor was it improved in any way that was important to me.
Did they do a handling upgrade later on for the 575 to address some of the criticism?
Yeah, they did. I'm not sure I ever drove that. Yeah, but I think the damage had been done by then. Certainly, reputationally, the 550 is you know, regarded as being a different sort of proposition to a 575, and probably rightly so.
There you go, Josh. Thank you for your question. Well, we'll keep doing listener questions at the end of the podcast, so get them across for next year, and we'll be back with you in 2023.
Look forward to it. Happy Christmas.
Thank you. Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.